My name is William. I go to PS216 and I'm 11 years old. One of my favorite desserts in the world is butter cookies. When we have butter cookie day, you will always see me asking someone for butter cookies. I give my whole lunch away for butter cookies. Once I had 6 packs of butter cookies before.
Did your mom know about this?
Nope. Never told her. She'd probably freak out.
When you're a kid, lunch is the one part of the school day when you don't have to sit quietly at your desk. You're not being watched so closely. You can get away with stuff.
So I grew up in a strict Chinese household in Texas, and what I loved was that school lunches legitimized ice cream and potato chips, which we were never allowed to have at home.
There was one girl in my class who was willing to trade her Little Debbie's. She would give me her ho-ho, her zebra cake, for my vegetables.
It was just like the best part of my day, every single day.
And I still think to this day, my mom has no idea about that.
Lunchtime is the closest thing you get to being on your own at school. If the classroom is where you learn about history and math, the lunchroom is where you learn about yourself. Sometimes the lessons are small, but memorable.
To this day, I've still not eaten another olive, and I don't see myself having any olives anytime soon.
Sometimes you impress your friends, and school lunch is triumphant.
And I did it, and I was awesome, at least for that day.
And other times, it's traumatic.
It was safe to say that after that, I bought school lunch rather than bring any more Filipino food to class.
You might have forgotten a whole century of American history. You might not remember where you put your wallet this morning. But I'll bet you remember school lunch. Today on the show, we're going to hear your stories, the stories you sent in of memorable moments at school lunch. Plus, school cafeterias across the country are getting rid of the spork. I will attempt to choke back tears and head to an elementary school to find out what the kids think of that, what they're eating these days, and what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. Stick around. From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. So why are we talking about school lunches now? Well, we got interested in the topic because public schools across the country are in the process of phasing out the beloved spork. At least, beloved by me. And this is a big decision with really big repercussions. New York City schools alone serve almost 1 million meals a day. Only the U.S. military serves more meals each day than the New York City public school system. That's a lot of sporks that are going to get put out of work.
So in New York City alone, we use 124 million sporks a year.
This is Stephen O'Brien, Director of Food and Menu Management for New York's public schools. He's helping lead the transition from sporks to compostable forks and knives, which are better for the environment and more like what most kids use at home. Schools have already replaced these square styrofoam trays with round compostable plates. And New York isn't alone. They're teaming up with school districts in LA, Chicago, Miami, Dallas, and Orlando to make what could be the biggest utensil purchase in history.
When we pool all of our resources together, we're serving about 3 million meals a day. So we'd be talking about a purchase of somewhere in the realm of 500 million utensils being used in all of these cities combined.
Per year.
Per year.
So clearly, this is a big decision. Literally, hundreds of millions of utensils are waiting to hear their fate. I'm sure that cost is a huge concern, as it should be. Public school budgets, I know, are tight. Mm-hmm. Beyond cost, what are the other considerations that you're looking at?
So when we've done some initial research, for example, we found that some of the compostable utensils melted. We found that some of the compostable utensils broke.
Do you have like a team of fifth graders like in a lab who are just like banging forks against a
we
plate?
We actually do.
Really?
So in New York City schools, we have a taste testing group that comes to our headquarters office twice a week. We see about 2,000 students a year who develop the products that we offer in our schools.
I wondered how students are feeling about these changes. So I went to the cafeteria at PS216 in Brooklyn. A fifth grader named Danya told me she has some issues with the new compostable plates. She says sometimes sauce seeps through onto the table, and that means more work for her.
When you have macaroni and cheese or chicken, the wet part like stays on the table and we have to clean it up. And in the foam, like all we have to do is just eat and throw it in the trash can.
So you said mac and cheese is what always bleeds through?
Yep.
That's a problem. You could like put a leaf of lettuce on the bottom, on the plate, and then put the mac and cheese on top of the lettuce leaf, and that would create a barrier to help protect the plate. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's smart.
Now, Danya, I don't know if you know about this, but they're probably going to be changing the spork at some point.
Yes.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I feel weird because we got used to the sporks that they created, the fork and the spoon. But like, when they will create a new one, we think it would be a waste. It's a pro and it's a con.
Danya says the pro is that the new forks and knives will be compostable. The con is that it's going to mean two utensils for each kid, a fork and a knife, instead of just one. She's pretty sharp. Stephen O'Brien, the guy we heard earlier who oversees school food, he says sauce isn't actually seeping through the plates. It's that these plates are more breathable. So when you get the hot food on the plate on the cold table, the hot and cold meat, it creates steam, which makes condensation. So that moisture that the kids are seeing under the plates on the table, it's actually condensation, not sauce. Still, I pitched him on my Line Your Plate with Lettuce campaign. I figured the cooler lettuce could be a temperature buffer and reduce condensation.
I would actually take it a step further. As a chef, I would be looking for it to be spinach, because then you would end up having the spinach wilt a little bit, and you would have cheesy spinach, sort of like a cream spinach.
Whoa, are you a chef?
Yes.
Oh, wow, and I'm not, and you can tell the difference. You see?
There you go.
That's why you figured that out, and I didn't.
But I wouldn't have thought of that unless you actually started with your concept first.
Okay, see, that's a creative idea, brainstorming.
It's great.
So keep your eyes peeled for our big Line Your Plate with Spinach campaign, I guess. Back in the lunchroom, Danya and I finished discussing plates and sporks and started talking about the stuff that really matters. So who do you usually sit with at lunch?
I actually sit with some of my friends, Stephanie and Christina, and sometimes Nina.
Do you guys play together outside of school too?
Yeah.
So you guys are like all best friends.
Yeah.
And what do you like to talk about at lunch?
We sometimes talk about life.
Like what?
Like what are you going to do in the future? What middle school do you want to go to?
So when it's your turn to talk about what you want to do in the future, what do you say?
I want to be a teacher.
After Danya, I talked with William, another fifth grader. He's the kid you heard earlier who loves butter cookies. His mom always packs fruit with his lunch.
If I'm lucky, I'll have apples and oranges and maybe grapes.
Which do you like better, apples or oranges? Compare
oranges.
Them for me.
Oranges.
Really?
Oranges.
Why? Why do you like oranges better?
Because they're juicier and you can just eat them whole. And you don't have to worry about the rough skin.
Yeah. You ever take the orange wedges and like kind of let them sit out for a little bit and they get a little bit dry and crusty on the outside but still super juicy on the inside?
Sometimes. Sometimes if I get the wedges or just a regular orange, I'll just leave it in the freezer sometimes and then take it out in 10 minutes and then eat it.
How did you discover that?
I just once was like, you know what? I wonder what would happen if I put an orange in the freezer. 10 minutes later, there you go. You'll be surprised, but it's actually juicier than a regular orange.
Really?
And it's kind of crunchy.
William likes to sit with his best friend Timothy and a few other friends, but they can't always sit with him.
Sometimes they can't because I'm really, really allergic to peanut butter.
Oh, so those kids can't sit too close to you?
Yeah.
When you see other kids sitting far away eating peanut butter foods, how do you feel about that?
I'm not in danger. Thank goodness.
Yes. What do you guys talk about at lunch?
We usually play this game called Minecraft.
I hear some of the girls at their lunch table, they talk about the future and what they're going to do with their lives. Do you guys ever talk about that?
Nope. Because none of us know what we're going to do. Some of us want to be computer geniuses. Some of us want to be programmers. Some of us want to create new ideas. Some of us want to save this world.
Sometimes in the cafeteria, who sits where creates a drama. Gina is another fifth grader. She says kids switch tables when they're in a fight with someone.
So, fifth grade, we have prom. And, you know, I don't know why, but they start like, oh, I want to go out with her. No, what? I asked first. No, you can't do that. I asked first. And then they start fighting with each other. And then the girls have to, like, avoid them to just get away with them. Because they're like, who do you want more, me or him? And then I'm just standing over there watching. And I'm thinking to myself, why is this happening?
Are you going to the prom?
I'm going with my friends because I have no intention of going with a boy because I'm too young. Too young.
Coming up, we're going to go back in time. We'll hear your school lunch stories, stories that have stuck with you even though most of them happened decades ago. You just don't forget school lunch, for better or worse. Stick around. Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Quick reminder to please take The Sporkful Listener Survey. This is your chance to share your ideas and opinions and influence the future of the show. It'll just take you a couple minutes, so please go to sporkful.com/survey. Again, sporkful.com/survey. Thanks. A little while back, we asked for your school lunch stories, and you guys sent in so many good ones. We all had formative experiences in the cafeteria. Ryan in Manitoba, Canada, had one back in first grade when he ate his first olive.
It was the worst thing I ever tasted in my life. And I still remember at 6 or 7 years old standing over the drinking fountain at my elementary school and rinsing my mouth out because that was just disgusting. And to this day, I've still not eaten another olive. And I don't see myself having any olives anytime soon.
Kate grew up in North Dallas. She ate some gross things back in her day, too. But under very different circumstances.
When I was in third grade, all I wanted was to be accepted by this particular group of guys. They were super cool. They were super smart. I probably had crushes on most of them. And one of the ways that I could impress them was to take them up on food dares. And the one I remember being the most impressive to them was when they dared me to take a small cup of chocolate milk and put pepper and salt and pickles into it and drink the whole thing and eat the pickle too. And I did it, and they were grossed out, and I was awesome, at least for that day.
Not all your school lunch stories involve gross food. Some of you actually sent in stories that made me pretty hungry. Here's Cecilia in Midlothian, Texas.
My favorite school lunch was a chicken fried steak with mashed potatoes and gravy, green beans, and a really delicious homemade yeast roll. And you would get in the line at the cafeteria, and you could see the cafeteria ladies back there, and the steam was wafting up from their warming tables. And hopefully you got a dinner roll that was from the middle of the pan because it was bready on all sides and not crusty. And it was a great meal that you looked forward to on the calendar every month. And I just really appreciate the love and the care that those cafeteria ladies put into those meals back then.
Betty in Modesto, California, also remembers some great lunches, although hers weren't made by the school or her parents. She got them from a girl in her class who was from Fiji.
We became friends, and she was very excited to share her food with me. And she would bring me over to her table and share what she had brought from home, and even sometimes asked her mom to make special things just to share with me. And it was an experience I wouldn't have had outside of the lunchroom, I don't think, to get to know somebody and their culture through their food.
Not all lunchtime cultural exchange goes that well. Joanne's Filipino-American. She grew up in the Bay Area. One time in kindergarten, her grandmother packed her lunch for her.
Steamed rice, sweet sausages called longaniza,
and that infamous blood stew called Dinuguan. It sounds like a horror movie, but it is one of the most delicious dishes I've ever had in my entire life. By the time lunchtime came, my lunch had already gotten cold and the rice got hard and the blood stew coagulated. So of course, you know, I needed to get it heated up. My teacher forced me to go to the eighth grade class because it was the only classroom that had a microwave. I already was a nervous kindergartner, but walking into a classroom full of upperclassmen made me even more anxious. I handed my Tupperware to the eighth grade teacher, and she proceeded to open the lid and look in there, which I didn't want her to do. She twitched her nose and made this look that made me not want to bring Filipino food to my class ever again. It was safe to say that after that, I bought school lunch rather than bring any more Filipino food to class.
We heard a lot of stories like this one in our series, Other People's Food. You know, kids feeling different because they brought their culture's food for lunch. In fact, it's so common that some immigrant parents go out of their way to make sure their kids don't get made fun of for their food. Burhan grew up in Canada. His parents moved there from Pakistan. His mom would always try to make Canadian food for his lunches so he'd have the same food as the other kids. Problem was, she'd never eaten those foods.
My bologna cheese sandwiches were so drenched in mayonnaise and wet vegetables that the meal was unsalvageable. So it became a game of trying to see if the sandwich would stick to the ceiling of our gymnasium, because we would eat in the bleachers of our gymnasium in high school.
And did it stick?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Of course, school lunch isn't only about the food. Last week, you heard Daily Show correspondent Asif Manvi here on the show. He talked about adjusting to American food and culture when he moved here from England as a teenager. He told us there was one thing about his high school cafeteria in Florida that he noticed right away.
It was very segregated. It was like the white kids sat with the white kids, the black kids sat with the black kids, and then the two Asian kids sat with the math teacher. And it was just... And I felt like, I was like, it was very interesting. And I didn't know exactly where I fit into that world. You know, like I was like this brown kid with an English accent. And I was like, where do I sit in the cafeteria? So I ended up sitting with the drama kids.
Sometimes even when you think you've found your people, the people at your table turn on you. That's kind of what happened to Kelly in Waupaca, Wisconsin. She wrote in with a story. I got her on the phone to get more details.
When I was in middle school, I had a pretty rough time with the other girls. Girls tend to be really mean in middle school. And there was a day when they decided it'd be really fun to take a bunch of those little disposable butter packets and poke little holes with forks in them and smear them all over my face and say, "You're getting a butter facial. Ha ha, isn't this fun?" And it was probably like five or six girls, and they just kind of held me down in the lunch table and all took turns smearing the butter around. It was pretty traumatic. Like, it was one of those experiences where you are trying to laugh about it during the time because you want to be cool, you know, because you're 11 or 12. But it pretty much felt like I was helpless. You just don't want to admit ever how you're really feeling, but trying to be someone else because you're just learning who you are. So I think looking back on things like that or experiences, if you choose to see it as mean as it really is, it's kind of... too painful. You know, you have to almost take it with a lighthearted edge instead of being offended by it.
And during this time when you were in middle school, like, how did you feel about school lunch in general? Like, was it something that you looked forward to seeing your friends, or was it more something you didn't look forward to?
I think it really depended upon the day. You know, if you were in the top of the heap and you're friends with all the popular kids and you're doing good and you're feeling, you know, like you can't do anything wrong or you have a new boyfriend, the lunchroom's a great place because you're the queen of the lunchroom. But if you're had a bad week or you had a bad day or you're in a fight with your friends, then the lunchroom can be a pretty miserable and lonesome place.
That does it for this week. Thanks so much to all you guys who sent in your amazing school lunch stories. And I want to give a quick shout out to the lunch ladies that I remember from middle school. I can picture them. I can remember them. I mean, like it was yesterday, them pacing the halls, checking on us. I remember Miss Weil. I remember Mrs. Lennon. And of course, who could forget Mrs. Herbert, who we all called Large Marge because she looked like that character from Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Have a nice day.
Be sure and tell them Large Marge sent ya.
Next week on the show, Weird Al. Yes, Weird Al talks about making the video for Fat, the real meaning of Eat It, and why, even though he wrote a song called I Love Rocky Road, he actually only likes Rocky Road. That's next week. Quick reminder, please take the Sporkful listener survey. It'll take you a couple minutes, and it's your chance to tell us what you want to hear from our show. Go to sporkful.com/survey. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me. Editing help from Shoshana Gold. Engineering help from Irene Trudell and Bill O'Neill. Music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And this is Sasha
and Zoe Moore
from Booton, New Jersey.
And I'm Cole Anderson from Fort Collins, Colorado.
And I'm Phoebe from Potomac, Maryland. And I'm reminding you,
eat more, eat better,
and eat more better.